May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Please be seated. I believe, Lord, help thou my unbelief. Everyone has the desire to be certain. Everyone is often uncertain, and everyone should have confidence in the Lord. The Lord asks us to reject strict certainty, move through uncertainty, and arrive at a confidence in his word. Everyone experiences these three states in an orderly way during their lives, and each state serves the purpose of bringing us to live the life the Lord wants us to enjoy. Let's consider the state of certainty first. Certainty is a tantalizing idea. It sounds like something we should strive for, something that, once achieved, should make life easier. When we use the word certain, for example, I'm certain I left my keys on the dresser, we are insisting that there is no possibility that we left our keys anywhere else. When we say, I'm certain I won't like that food, we are removing any doubt about whether we will like the dish. When we say, I'm certain that person has the best intentions, we are denying any option to reconsider. Yes, sometimes we exaggerate how certain we are, and we claim the appearance of certainty when we acknowledge we are less than certain. But this is what certainty means. Certainty sounds wonderful because it would be such a relief. How much of our time do we spend weighing options, wondering about a course of action, doubting what we are told or what we think? It can be exhausting to move through life without the bedrock of certainty that our course of action is justified. Perhaps we are certain of some things. We can be certain that we are alive, that we have our bodies and our senses, and that there are people we meet and interact with and even love, to name a few things. In a general sense, we can be certain that these things are true. Certainty in a general sense can simply mean that nobody disputes the notion or nobody operates contrary to the idea. So what about being certain about other things? Can we be certain that we have the job that will bring the most happiness, the most use? Can we be certain that we spend our day the way the Lord wants us to? Can we be certain that we are going to heaven? This kind of certainty sounds very appealing. And yet, think for a moment what certainty does to the human mind. Imagine someone who is certain. In other words, has no doubt as to the correctness of his ideas and the difficulties in working with this person. Small children are in some ways the most certain of all. They are certain they are hungry. They are certain they have been wronged. And they are certain that they should get their way. Certainty at first seems like a desirable state, but strict certainty has more in common with ignorance than with wisdom. There are many stories in the Word where people, such as the centurion or the Phoenician woman, ask the Lord for help with apparent certainty. They know the Lord can help them. Now, while these stories may appear to show us certainty, they instead show us faith and confidence. But more on confidence later. Strict certainty. Certainty that is not synonymous with confidence, but instead speaks of an unquestioning attitude, still looks appealing. If we were certain, we could rest. If we were certain, we could cease to wonder what we should do. Being certain, unequivocally, unquestionably, undeniably certain, is like knowing the future. You know you will not change your mind in the future about what you do today. That's certainty. We read from Divine Providence today that were we to know that future, and could anything produce a stronger certainty than knowing the future, our happiness and hope and freedom would be in jeopardy. We may think certainty would inspire or comfort us, but just as knowing the future is contrary to the Lord's divine providence, certainty is contrary to the Lord's divine providence. Certainty is a bad friend. Like a bad friend, certainty isolates us. Specifically, it isolates us from freedom and happiness and hope. Certainty and freedom aren't friends. If we were unwaveringly certain of a conclusion, it would be a form of compulsion. We would be trapped by it, and our thoughts would recede. Certainty and happiness aren't friends. The more unshakably certain we are, the more we would lose the joy and wonder in our day. Certainty and hope aren't friends. As we read today, it is the very delight of reason to see from love the effect in thought, not the effect in its attainment, but before it, not in the present, but in the future. Hence, man has what is called hope. We enjoy anticipating the future, hoping about the future, and true certainty destroys this. Even worse, certainty is an illusion, a lie. Being certain doesn't spare us from being wrong. It means we have foolishly invested in being right. If we are certain, we should see the lie and abandon the lie of unflinching certainty. This is how we know that unflinching certainty is at its best a temporary, immature state. So if we abandon certainty, what replaces it? Let's consider uncertainty. In our story today from Mark, the man with the possessed son was not certain. He came to the Lord, asked the Lord for help, and insisted he believed the Lord could help. And he was not certain. When the Lord informs the man that everything is possible for those who believe, he responds, "I believe, Lord. Help thou my unbelief." Unlike strict certainty, uncertainty or doubt is always a choice we can make. We can always doubt. We can always question. We can always re-examine and disassemble our conclusions. We can be uncertain about coming to church. We can be uncertain about how we spend the rest of our week. We can be uncertain about every decision that faces us in our lives. Uncertainty is nearly effortless. Select any minor question you face today and doubt it. Uncertainty is the mortal state. Strict certainty is beyond our mortal state because uncertainty is always with us. So what use does this serve? Uncertainty seems to rob our joy, our life of joy, if not all at once, then by dribs and drabs. Especially if we crave certainty, doubt and uncertainty can be like someone standing just behind us, questioning our every move, reminding us of our limitations, our ignorance, and coaxing us to freeze, paralyzed. How can the state of uncertainty be useful? Consider again the man in our story who petitions the Lord for help. He says he believes, and then asks the Lord to help his unbelief. This is a mature, if not entirely happy, state of being. While strict certainty allows for no room for doubt, normal life can be full of doubt, and yet doubt and uncertainty need not crowd out every other thought. The Lord can help us believe, even if we have unbelief. In an orderly state, doubt tempers faith. It does not destroy it. Much as cast iron may look sturdier than steel, but is actually more brittle, faith that has been questioned, worked with, reconsidered, tried out, is more flexible and more useful than faith that has sat with us unexamined. If strict certainty is a bad friend, uncertainty is a useful friend, if perhaps a bit of a downer. The Roman rulers, during their moments of greatest pride and exaltation, would have processions called triumphs, during which they would ride through Rome in a gilded chariot as everyone cheered them on. It was traditional for the ruler to have a slave ride in the chariot with him, whispering in his ear, "You are only a mortal. You are only a man." Over and over again, to remind them not to get too carried away by the certainty of their own greatness. Having someone in our own chariot can be very useful. Uncertainty can introduce us to the wonderful companion and friend of humility. Not insisting we know something incontrovertibly is a prerequisite for listening and obedience. If our uncertainty pins us down, saps our resolve, freezes our mind, it is not an orderly uncertainty. It is the unbelief with which we should ask the Lord's help. Instead, if we are uncertain, we should continue to move through life. Uncertainty with the man from our story did not paralyze him. It did not keep him from seeking the Lord. Once we realize that strict certainty will never be ours, we can begin to be comfortable with the useful and humble uncertainty that being limited and mortal brings with it. Life is full of choices, and strict, unyielding certainty will never be ours. Once we realize this, what are we to do? How are we to move on? A similar predicament was presented to the children of Israel regarding prophets. Once Moses was gone, how were they to know whether a man claiming to be a prophet truly was a prophet? How could they be certain? The answer the Lord gave them through Moses did not expect them to be certain, but it did not accept a frozen state of uncertainty either. We read from Deuteronomy, "If thou say in thy heart, how shall we know the word which Jehovah has not spoken? If a prophet speaks in the name of Jehovah, and the word is not, nor come to pass, it is the word which Jehovah has not spoken. The prophet has spoken it presumptuously, thou shalt not be afraid of him." That's the law. The people were to watch and see. The prophet would make his prophecy, his prediction, and if the prophecy came true, the people could be sure the prophet spoke for the Lord. Now keep in mind, in this same chapter, the penalty for being a false prophet was death. So pretending to prophesy for the Lord was a very risky proposition. This very practical advice, watch and see, is a guiding truth for us to move from uncertainty to a wiser state of confidence. For every truth the Lord gives us, he asks that we see if it works, if it comes true, if it leads to happiness. He does not want a blind faith, but one informed by judgment and humility. We should be affirmative to his truth, but with a humble uncertainty. The state of certainty tempts us to abandon freedom. The state of uncertainty reminds us of our ability to choose what to believe. The state of confidence both acknowledges uncertainty and shows us the path forward. We move from ignorance to struggle to wisdom. Whereas certainty can trick us into thinking our path must be inflexibly set, confidence is supple. We take risks. We make guesses. We adjust. Disorderly uncertainty can paralyze us with doubt, but confidence lets us trust in the Lord and move forward. Confidence is fundamentally a faith that we can be useful in the world. Confidence can live within us alongside uncertainty, because true confidence is a form of humility. Confidence that does not insist we have all the answers, just that answers are to be had. Think of the various tasks that we do confidently. A cook making their 1,000th omelet. A teacher preparing class for the 10th year. A musician performing a song for the 100th time. In none of these endeavors do we insist on certainty. The cook is not strictly certain the omelet will turn out any more than the musician is certain they won't hit a sour note. A gifted teacher may have serious doubts about her ability and her plan, and yet she has confidence shaped by her experience and effort. Confidence allows for the healthy doubt that tempers our faith. If someone knows that an omelet will come out perfectly, they are ill-equipped to respond when it doesn't. And the teacher who knows the lesson will be received well is in trouble if the lesson goes poorly. A confident cook or teacher or musician will still make mistakes, and confidence can be misplaced. But built into the very idea of confidence is the humility and recognition that the confidence is limited. It may be more comforting for you if your mechanic swears that he's certain he can fix your transmission, that failure is not an option. But it may be more honest and humble and useful for him to say that he is confident he can fix your transmission. And thus confidence starts to look like certainty. When an old man says he is certain he married the right woman, behind that statement are the decades of life strengthened and deepened by daily choices to love his wife that have fashioned his confidence. He's not speaking from an immature refusal to reconsider the question of whom to marry. He is speaking from the wisdom of having made a decision and loved the results. He believes the predictions of the prophet after Moses. This confidence is very different from the untested certainty of a young man who describes in detail the woman he will marry, but has yet to meet. In everyday language, confidence and certainty are sometimes interchangeable, but as attitudes toward the life the Lord has laid out for us, the distinction between them is an important ingredient in our happiness. The Lord does not demand that we be certain. He knows we need him to help our unbelief. The Lord does demand that we be spiritually confident, trusting in his providence and the freedom and rationality he has given us to make prudent decisions with acceptable risks. While certainty tolerates no mistake or is shattered, confidence increases when mistakes become lessons that guide future conduct. We We all have states of certainty, uncertainty, and confidence. If you are certain, consider whether your certainty is mature confidence or an immature denial of your own limitations. If you are uncertain, acknowledge it. Welcome humility into your home and continue to seek the Lord and his kingdom. If you are in confidence, be confident in the truth of his word. The Lord asks us to move from natural certainty, the childish ignorance of natural certainty, through the uncomfortable but necessary states of doubt and uncertainty, into the state of mature spiritual confidence that has in it the humility and audacity to serve the Lord and the neighbors he has given us. Whoever therefore hears these words of mine and does them, I will liken him unto a prudent man who builds his house upon the rock. And the rain descended, and the rivers came, and the winds blew, and they fell before that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. Amen. Please. And now, to the one only God, Jesus Christ our Lord, be glory and dominion forever.